Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome to a very special edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. I say special edition because I'm rolling solo today. But you're not just going to be hearing my voice the whole time. I've actually got a few pretty good treats for you as we wrap up. This is like the official wrap-up of the off-season. We had all the off-season podcasts through draft stuff and OTAs and everything else that went on. And then the last few weeks, we have gotten into the Bengals top five plays of the last 30 years series. Last week, we brought you a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. If you haven't listened to that, go check it out. But it's been fun doing that. But this is the last one. I've got today's podcast going to talk to you about the number one play of the last 30 years with some fun background stuff. And then next week, it's on. It's post Mock Turtle Soup Media Bonanza podcast, where we'll be giving you everything that we hear next week from the Bengals opening season media luncheon, which is next Tuesday, 11 o'clock. The Mock Turtle Soup, the Orange Sherbet, the Salmon, the menu never changes ever, because it's very much the Bengals way. Give them what they want. They demand the Mock Turtle Soup. Give them the Mock Turtle Soup. Anyway, that will be coming next week, and we will be off and running with the season. Training camp starts. First practice is Thursday, the 26th. So we will have everything. Make sure you lock it into Cincinnati.com, and obviously keep listening to the podcast. Spread the word. Thanks again to everybody who offered their suggestions when we asked for them on how we can make this thing better, more or less, what you want. We've got some changes coming on that front. Once we get going, I think you'll enjoy. But for now, I want to talk a little bit about Stanford Jennings and the number one play. Here's what I want to bring to you, though. You never know. You just never know what you're going to come across when you start doing things like this, what stories you're going to hear. And we kind of talked a little bit about that last week when you're hearing stories that are sort of tangentially related or just interesting things you hear. And we brought you some of those last week. This one was just funny. And so there's three things I'm going to bring to you today, with obviously Stanford's 93-yard kickoff return in Super Bowl 23 is the number one play of the last 30 years. I would argue number one play of the 50-plus years of Bengals football. For pure, at all the four categories that we were going by, you can't get much bigger than that. And as anybody I talked to that was there on the team that day said, that was the moment they thought that they had won the Super Bowl, that was it. And, you know, Stanford Jennings was going to be your MVP. The Bengals were going to win the Super Bowl for the first time in franchise history. Paul Brown was going to complete his trophy case. And then Joe Montana happened. But we won't get into that. What I want to do, you know the play by now. I encourage you, when you get a chance, it will be up here very soon. Read the piece on Stanford Jennings and his daughter Kelsey, and really their whole family, on sort of a play that unites them. Because anybody that remembers from those days, and I'll educate the youngins. Stanford, his daughter Kelsey was born the day before the Super Bowl, the night before the Super Bowl, and they played video from a local TV crew that had captured, the first time that his wife Kathy had brought Kelsey out. They showed that video in the final team meeting on Saturday night. It was a pretty moving experience for everybody that was even there in Stanford, obviously first and foremost. And it was to say right then, I've got to do something big the next day. And everyone's saying that, but then to actually do it with Kelsey's name on your shoes and immediately be dedicating it to her. They're bonded by that forever. And it's crazy because people that are old Bengals fans remember that play and remember that Super Bowl clear as day. And it's hard to ever forget it. And it's funny. We went, myself and Sam Green, our photographer, went down to Atlanta, and that's where Stanford lives, and we met up with his entire family and did an official interview with him and Kelsey. And it's the 30th anniversary. She's going to be turning 30 in January 21st, and it's, you know, for people that remember it like it was yesterday, it's a crazy thing to believe. But it was really interesting to see. It's really kind of the crux of this entire series, and sort of the point of this entire series was this: how one play can change so much, how it can change perceptions, how it can change relationships, how it can change jobs, how it can change lives. And there's no greater example than that in Bengals history than Stanford Jennings. And I think that's what the story conveys when you read it, watch the videos, the video that Sam put together of the tour of Stanford's basement. So he shows you all the memorabilia and opportunities he was given through the NFL and that play. And that Mike Mayer just put together to complete our series on all five of these plays and hear a little bit from Stanford and Kelsey. I encourage you to read it if you get a chance. Watch the videos if you get a chance. But this is not about that, because that's all out there for you. I'm not going to bombard you with it. I will bring you a little bit of Stanford Jennings. I want to start. I have just three great things that happened on the course to this story. The first one was calling Sam Weish. Anytime you call Sam Weish, you know you're going to be entertained. He's talkative. He's got stories for days. He kind of goes from point to point and all over the place and ties it back together. And it's just, you just want to sit there and listen to it all day. As we've done stuff last year when we did Bengals 50 series, Jim talked to Sam for about 2 hours, and it's easy to understand how that can happen. I wanted to relay to you, I use air quotes, conversation with Sam, when I called him about Stanford. Now, he has a special relationship with Stanford beyond being his coach. Sam went to Furman. Stanford went to Furman. And he tells the story in that you'll hear in 1984 when you're talking about drafting him in the third round. He had to defend Stanford Jennings to Paul Brown to say that this is not a Furman pick. This is not me being biased towards the Furman guy. He really is worth the selection, and they have been tight ever since. They still are tight now. There's a group chat that Stanford says he has with him and Boomer and Sam and one or two other people. He tells a story about all of them being in that group chat while Sam was waiting for his heart a couple years ago, which was really really amazing story. But anyway, so they're still tight to this day. So to call Sam, I just wanted to get his opinion about his relationship with Stanford and see where it went from there. Well, if you talk to Sam, you know this. I asked one question. I asked one question, and about 15 minutes later, there was pure gold. So I just kind of feel like it's kind of fun to give people a peek into some of these conversations. It won't just be Sam, though. So it's going to be Sam, and then it's going to be Mike Martin, who I spoke to, and who's a friend of Stanford, so he offered some good perspective on it. But I had to ask him about when he sang before Super Bowl 23, because he was injured when not playing, and he won essentially a singing talent contest. And I just remember that clearly, and I just kind of jokingly was asking him about it, and he offered a truly incredible story that I just think needs a place. So we're going to get to that too. So after we get done with Sam Weish, Mike Martin's story about winning the talent contest will be up next. And then to close it all out, I'll bring you a little bit of what Stanford Jennings and Kelsey had to say in our interview. So make sure you enjoy that. But first, here is my phone call, essentially, to Sam Weish. And from the first question I ask until he was done with that part, until I got to, I won't bore you with the follow-ups and everything went into that. I just thought the 15-minute summation of Stanford Jennings was just fun to listen to. So here's Sam Weish in all his Sam Weishness, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy. I know I did.
I'm curious. I mean, you guys went way back. I mean, with the Furman connection and everything there. I mean, what was your first interactions with Stanford, even going back to when you first met him?
Well, really in the draft, we drafted him in the third round, and I had a couple of coaches, including Paul Brown, look at me and say, you know, if this is a Furman pick, let me know right now, because we want the best player, and they got the entire country full of colleges with good players. I said, Coach, I'm telling you, this guy, he led the Southern Conference, I think, three or four years in a row in rushing, and set all kinds of records for rushing in the Southern Conference and Furman, of course, records. And he's a quality guy, and he's smart, and he is versatile. We put him out like a wide receiver if we need to, or we could put him in there to run back kicks, and he'll do it because of his size. Stanford's about 6'3", maybe on a pinch more, but 6'3", and about 210, I guess, something like that. I mean, he wasn't a little scat back. He was a big back. But he was reliable. And I will tell you one story, though, that at the draft, that was it. I mean, I gave my disclaimer. I said I dislike him as a player, regardless of where he went to school. And I wasn't alone, by the way. I had a whole Jim Anderson, the running back coach. And I forgot. There was one other coach in there that had looked at film on him and you know, all up, gave thumbs up. So he was a unanimous pick when it came down to it.
Yeah.
But I'm about to say, when I switch gears on you there. Anyway, in the middle of that season, we're playing Kansas City. You know, that year the year before, of course, everybody wanted me fired because we didn't win enough games.
And yeah.
It was a strike year. It was a miserable year, by the way, just from an atmosphere standpoint. Players were divided in that locker room way too much because of the strike. And a lot of things happened that, you know, put us off, took our mind off the game. And so in the offseason, I had written a letter to all the players saying, I'm gonna assign roommates to you, Birds. And now when we start the regular season, if you want to go back to, you know, your best bud, then you can do that. But in training camp, I want a defensive guy with an offensive guy, and a black guy with a white guy, and a southern guy with a northern guy, and a, you know, Big Ten guy with a Pac-12 guy or something. Mm. I was going to arrange them by personalities. There was a strong personality, and I had a good young player that, you know, I wanted him to grow up in the game a little bit more. I was going to put them together. So a lot of reasons to pair him up. But anyway, Stanford, and
Yeah.
And Boomer, of course, had about as strong a personality as you could have. He was one of the leaders on the team, and well, Reggie Williams on defense, I guess. And Stammer was a younger player. And so anyhow, that was the reason that I put them together, because I thought Stanford was going to be one of those, and he was one of those leaders as his career went along. And he was one of those guys that I would tell him, you know, on a kickoff return, usually we put two people back there, by the way, but I would tell him, you know, I want you to be sure you handle the ball on this one for whatever reason I had. Oh, we're playing Kansas City that year. This was after the 87 season. We go to 88. We win the first six in a row. We really should have won the first seven, but the winning touchdown was ruled an interception. Chris Collinsworth had it for the touchdown, and the official said it was simultaneous going to the defense. How that works out, I don't know. But anyhow, we lost up there in New England on a hair, you know, tough one. But we're playing later in the year in Kansas City, and we've got a lead on them, but a slight lead, and just very little time left, a minute or two. And I told Stanford, I said, no matter what, you handle the ball. We had a young guy, and I can't remember who that was. I hope Stanford told you when you talked to him. But
yeah,
there were two people back there, and the other guy, who's the other guy, did he say? Did he tell you?
I can't remember who it was.
Okay.
Was it Ira?
It was Hillary. I don't know. I was thinking it was a rookie that we had back there. And anyway, it was a younger player for sure. And I told Stafford, I said, you handle this ball. Well, Jan Stenerud for Kansas City, who's a good friend of mine, by the way. And I bring it up every time I see him in a golf tournament.
Yeah.
I said, you handle the ball, because I know you're sure-handed. The only way, you know, we screw this up is if we turn the ball over. And if we get possession, I think we can just sit down on the ball and we win, the game's over. Well, the ball is kicked way to the side of the younger player. His name is not coming to me, but I'm sure you can find that. It's in the record book there. But and he gets hit, I mean, really hit hard, and the ball does come loose, and they recover it. And it left Jan with a long field goal. I don't think they ran but one play, maybe. Maybe they didn't even run one play. They had to kick it right then or something. But it was that much, you know, it was that close to the end of the game, and Jan hits a long field goal and they win the ball game. That was one of the few losses that we had that season. And it came on that kickoff. So I can remember saying to myself, and I hope to goodness I didn't say it to Stanford, when we started that second half, I'm saying to myself, Stanford, just handle the ball. We don't want to start this half off with a turnover. And so I'm mumbling to myself, and generally, if I don't answer quickly, then I start worrying about it. But I watched the kickoff. Stanford gets it, of course. Two or three early good blocks that sprung him into the open for a minute. On a kickoff return, everybody's spread out, but the gaps in those that are left when you spread a kickoff coverage out, the gaps close pretty quick because the guys can take it and turn around and run at a different angle, and you never really feel like you got the home run done until you cross the goal line. Well, Stafford hit the hole perfectly, and the blocks were perfectly timed. Mike Stock was the special teams coach. I hired him from Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little sidebar there that remind me of that, and I'll come back to it. But anyway, Stanford hits it, which is a key. And a lot of players dance a little bit in there. You know, there's a lot of room. Which hole do I take? Which cavity is open widest? And Stanford didn't do that. He hit it, and you just pick it along as you're on the move. And as he's running, I can see that his legs, you know, that's all 101 yards, was it? Something like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't kicked to the 10. It was kicked to the, it was over the goal line. And I could tell that he was getting a little heavy-legged there like everybody else on the field was. But there was a guy closing on him, one of the little, you know, scooters they had in the game covering kickoffs. And I'm saying to myself, what, and every coach that will read this article will be in bed with me on this one. I'm saying to him, Stanford, tighten, hold that ball, he's going to strip it. Yeah. And, of course, a fumble that goes out of the back of the end zone is a touchback, and they would get the ball on the 20-yard line. But you could see, you know, a great play turned into a disaster because it was closing up. And the guy does get to him, but he doesn't get to him until he's already in the end zone. And Stanford has already read my lips somewhere along the line. And he was hugging that ball like never before. And I think I mentioned to him, I don't know if he remembers this afterwards, but he's coming off the field. He had his first child the night before. Kathy, his wife, had. Mm-hmm. And they were... the baby was born in Cincinnati, I think.
Yep.
And And so we had gotten one of the TV stations, I think, or not identified because I don't remember exactly which one. I think it was Channel NBC because it was an NBC game. But anyhow, they had sent us a video of Jeffy holding the baby after the birth, you know, and we were going to play it that night, which we did, the night before that Super Bowl. And so I had the guys come in, and I said, Stanford, all the big cheer goes up. He's a brand-new papa. And I said, we have a little surprise for you. And there was, played this little video, last about 45 seconds or a minute. And, there we go. Of course, we had a trauma the moments before that when Stanley Wilson didn't make it all the way to the meeting and therefore didn't play in the game because of the drug episode. Stanley, by the way, is a good guy. This is not a bad actor. Some people, you know, are just druggies and they do it to themselves. The drug owned him and he couldn't shake it. And, but he wasn't a bad guy. He still is not. I think he's out now, but he's been in and out of prison, you know, for a number of years. But anyway, it was a kind of an off-balance night, and I thought that film, when we did it, and the team kind of rallied around cheering, you know, a new addition to the Bengal family, and kind of put us back in the mindset we should have been in, and we got the game plan reviewed, and good night's sleep, and then the next day we played them a good game. It was, could have gone either way, obviously, final drive, even after Stanford made the great play that I think probably would have made him the MVP, if not maybe Jim Breach, because he kicked that field goal earlier that was really right on the edge of his range into the wind. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big win, but it was enough.
Yeah.
And so one of the two of them I was figuring would have been the MVP. And I don't know, two plays earlier before they score, we drop an interception in the end zone on a slant play to the right side there, Lewis Billups. And he's, you know, Cardi made a good coverage and just the ball bounced out. And then a couple plays later they hit
John Taylor.
John Taylor, John Taylor on the left side on the slant. And as you look at that touchdown, by the way, from the end zone cameras, we had three guys that miss it by an inch or two of rerouting the ball in flight, swatting it down. The coverage was good. The pass was perfect.
Yeah.
That was it. I'm glad the game is decided on good plays rather than mistakes. But that's what I remember about it. I it was mixed joy for him and after the game, and a game well played, and the fact that we lost the one game that Paul Brown didn't have a trophy for. You know, he had a high school and a college, and of course the All American League. How many times he won that? 11 times, something like that.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a Super Bowl trophy, and or Super Bowl winning trophy. He had one for us as an AFC champion, but that's what he's going to get again. So I regretted that big time, and told Paul after the game, and we had the little par and he had stuck with me the year before. I really felt like I owed him two favors. Number one, he signed me as a free agent in 1968, and he didn't know me from Beams.
Yeah.
I had a one-day workout out at St. X High School, I think it was, and he signed me to an $11,000 contract in 1968. I thought I was rich. In fact, I did. I went down to the phone booth. Didn't have cell phones. So I went down to the phone booth, put a dime in the phone, and called collect to my newlywed wife, Jane, and she accepted the call, which I was scared she wouldn't. I was afraid I wouldn't get to tell her the good news. But then all I said was, when she said, yes, I'll accept, if you go down further, turn it over to me, I said, we're rich. $11,000. I was in graduate school, working on my MBA, so $11,000 seemed like a lot of money, and it was a lot of money to us at that time. But Paul Brown didn't owe me a look, even much less a contract. But it was an expansion year, and he took a chance on me, and a lot of good things happened as a result for me.
Yes.
All right. Much thanks to Sam Weish for, you know, just behind the scenes kind of background on things like this. I mean, nobody is better about returning calls and doing interviews with reporters amongst any former players or coaches that I know than Sam Weish. I mean, he's just he's incredibly generous with his time. He's still just fantastic to talk to. And always great about returning calls, which as a reporter who often has calls not returned, as all reporters can claim, there's nothing worse than that. It's always great to deal with him, and I was happy that I was able to do it again here in this case, and he will be back. I think he'll be back with the 1988 team when they come back for the opener, the home opener against Baltimore on Thursday night. I think they're going to have everybody back. They're planning on it. Who knows if everybody will be able to make it, but I think most people from the 88 team are looking forward to it, at least those that I talked to. So look out for that, and Sam probably be back in town then. Somebody else who's planning on being back as part of that is former wide receiver Mike Martin, who was on that team but got hurt earlier in the year and missed the second half of the season, essentially. And he's been around the Cincinnati area for a while. He's in Chicago now. Actually, he has a smoothie and fitness company, The Lab Nutrition, in Chicago on kind of the south side. But anyway, I was talking to him just about his view as a friend of Stanford's, and he related to me the story about when he won the singing talent competition before the Super Bowl, and it just, the story he unleashed was just great, and I just wanted to share it with you. It involves Ahmad Rashad and John Candy and helicopters, and many other things, so I just thought it'd be a good thing to bring to you. So anyway, without further ado, here's Mike Martin talking about winning the singing talent competition before Super Bowl 23 and what ensued.
Well, tell you what I remember. I remember you singing before the game. That's like I will never forget that. Is you singing before the game? When was it? Was that actually before the game, or was that something they recorded earlier in the week? I don't remember the details on that.
No, actually, what happened was they recorded it the day before.
Yeah.
The day before, and they did like a trial run the day before, and then they did it before, it was right before the game.
Yeah.
So I tell my daughter, I said, you know how they have Bruno Mars and Beyonce doing a halftime show? I said, I was part of the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible.
You know, and won.
Yeah.
But what was the interesting part about that, and I remember telling Stanford this. John Candy and Ahmad Rashad were the host of the singing contest or talent show. And they were going to the game, you know, after we got finished, you know, airing everything. They were on their way to the game. And so they said, hey, we going on a helicopter. Would you want to fly back with us? And I'm like, I said, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And so we get on a helicopter. John Candy is scared out of his mind. Because all he kept saying was, okay, I'm too heavy. This plane's going to crash. They were like, something's wrong with this. I know we're going down. And Ahmad kept saying, John, if you don't shut up. You know, he said, both of y'all, you guys, they sit on that side of the helicopter so we can even out the wing. I'm like, oh, my. I said, man, this dude is tripping.
Yeah. But you made it all right.
Yeah, but here's another thing I want to tell my wife. Ahmad called Felicia Rashad on the phone. It's amazing with the things that you remember.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you what I did yesterday, but I can tell you all of those things.
Yeah.
He called Felicia Rashad, and he must have asked, he said, how do you like the show? And she must have said, yeah, I thought it was great. And he said, oh, I had the winner right here. He said, put him on the phone. So I get on the phone, and I'm like, hi, Felicia, how are you? He said, Mr. Martin. I mean, she said, Mr. Martin. She said, I got a bone to pick with you. I'm like, what'd I do? She said, the nerve of you, gyrating your hips on national TV. She said, and I'm like, and she started laughing. She said, no, I'm just joking. She said, you did wonderful. She said, I was going to tell you, I was going to call your mother and find out how she felt about you gyrating your hips on national TV like you're Elvis Presley or somebody. But she laughed and joked about it. And so I told my wife, guess who I talked to? I just got on the phone with Felicia Rashad.
That was former Bengals receiver Mike Martin. And to be honest, any story that involves John Candy and Felicia Rashad, I'm on board for it. Of course, John Candy famously a part of Super Bowl 23 as the way that Joe Montana calmed the nerves of everybody before the final drive was standing in the huddle saying, hey, isn't that John Candy? As he was right there by the field. So sort of tying that all together, I guess. A little bit. Anyway, thanks to everybody for following along with our top five plays of the last 30-year series. It was fun to put together. Hope you enjoyed some of the backstories we were able to bring you here on the podcast. I am going to bring you now some of the conversation with Stanford Jennings and Kelsey Jennings that we had when we went down and visited them in their Atlanta house and got a tour of their basement and where all the memorabilia is, including the actual football. It was just a big thanks to them for welcoming Sam and I into their house. It was a great time. But again, next week, we're back in season, baby. We're doing it. Mock Turtle Soup is Tuesday. We'll be bringing you a podcast after that. So on the 24th, we are back in season, BBP. A few new bells and whistles for you I think you might enjoy as well as we get going. Then we'll be in a training camp. First training camp practice is the 26th, and we will be off and running. And hey, a reminder, if you come down to camp and you see Jim and I there, make sure you say hello, give us a BBP yell, and we would love to chat with you if we have time, for sure. But certainly want to thank you, everybody, for that listen to the podcast. Always great to have you all on board. Anyway, here's Stanford and Kelsey Jennings, and I'll see you next week after Mock Turtle Soup.
Is there a special bond or connection for you because you were the Super Bowl baby? Like, what is that? Does that mean anything to you?
It seems unreal, I guess, because I was so little. But yeah, I think we'll always have that connection, and I love hearing the stories. Every year, when that Super Bowl is on TV, we watch that run, and my mom and dad tell me a little bit more of the story and what went on in the background. So yeah, very special.
So you watch. So every year when they do the run, when they run through them all on NFL Network, you watch.
That run.
You know, and then we turn it off.
And then.
Turn it off.
That's cool.
I want to know about the months leading up to that because, you know, the Bengals are on a path and the arrival of Kelsey's on a path. I mean, What were the months like leading up to that, and how tough was that for you trying to figure out what if and how are we going to do this?
So I was trying to sort of kind of gauge it with my wife, Kathy, and she attended the AFC Championship game, in which I was like, stay home. Because she, for the first round of the playoffs, she did stay home. But like for the AFC Championship, she was like, nope, I'm going to the game. So it was kind of that, you know, like I said, first kid and, you know, pregnant wife, and we were just wanting to be as, you know, careful and as we could be, and, you know, we'll come early. But, you know, after the AFC Championship game, it was like, okay, the due date is, you know, 2 weeks, which we're in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. And so it was kind of decided, you know, you're not going to come to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But you were going to go to the Super Bowl.
I was going to go to the Super Bowl. Now, she was making me go to the Super Bowl.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I don't know what those conversations are like. Are, you know, it's in your head. You think, well, hopefully this works out perfectly and I can do both. But, I mean, was there ever any push or pull either way as far as were you undecided, or was it always clear?
No, it was always. And I think she knew that, you know, you're going to go play the game. And our hope was that, you know, Kelsey would come after the game. I don't say Kelsey, it was like boy or girl, would come after the game. And, you know, so I'm talking with her, you know, all week. And then that Saturday, you know, my sister comes down. We just came back from practice, came to the hotel, and my sister comes down and grabs me and says, you know, Kathy's in labor. She's going, you know, in the room. And, you know, boom, it was happening just that quick that Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, that's incredible. So you're, well, what's going through your head at that point? I mean, on Saturday, you're in there. You're trying to plan for the biggest game of your life, and this news happens. I mean, you had to just been a box of emotions trying to figure it all out.
Yeah, it was a lot of, you know, first kid, and it's like, you know, finding out it was a girl, and, you know, we'd already knew what the name was going to be and, you know, things in that regard. But just the overall magnitude of, you know, I'm now a father, you know. And then it, you know, kind of turned to, okay, I've got to try to do something special. Just saying to myself, I've got to try to do something special, you know, for the arrival of my daughter, you know, Kelsey.
Yeah.
During the game. And that's, you know, everyone's saying that, but, you know, that was just something that, you know, kind of in me, I was like, okay, I got to try to do something.
Yeah. I mean, when you do something special, like, I mean, you're right. Everybody wants to say that. And I'm just wondering how long until you score when you're like, I did it. I mean, I can't believe I did something special.
Well, I think the overall magnitude of the game is in itself is kind of off the charts. And I think you recognize that as you're, you know, warming up, you're arriving to the game, there's just something just special about this game. They try to downplay it, but it's not. There's something special about that game. So as we're going through the process, and, you know, I'm on the kickoff return team, and, you know, I'm going to have a chance to, you know, touch the ball and things in that regard. So it's like, okay, I'm going to try to make the most out of every, you know, play that I have, whether it's going down to make a tackle or, you know, when I'm getting the ball and running with it, I'm going to run with it. And, you know, didn't happen immediately, but, you know, the first couple returns, you know, that I did, I felt, you know, pretty good, you know, about, you know, my performance there. And, you know, it just so happened that, you know, that point of the game and, you know, leading into the end of the third quarter where, you know, they, you know, scored and we get this opportunity and it's like, boom, here's a, you know, a shot. And I just go and just take off and run as fast as I could. And, you know, blocking was there, and everything just kind of happened.
I'm assuming if I can kind of shut my eyes and still see it, do you still shut your eyes and you can see it clear as day and play through it in your head?
You know, kind of yes and no, because of the outcome of that game. But it's, you know, it's one that it's a bit surreal, and the fact that we're talking about it, you know, almost 30 years later, it kind of certainly tells me, you know, what it meant to not only to me but to others as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a number of people that come to me and they can tell me what they did, you know, where they were, you know, at that given time, and again, these are, you know, friends of mine, whether it's people from Furman University, you know, some like childhood friends, you know, high school, just everywhere. And it's just a special time, and it's great to look back at that and just to remember it. And, you know, the fact that I wrote Kelsey's name on the back of my shoes was, you know, again, something just from an overall thought process, and for it to work out was just really just incredible.